Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 6, Episode 33. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids, he said in a nice, clear voice.
And we also have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Good, kid. Tim, are you enjoying the gift I gave you? The gift I passed on to you?
Thanks for giving me the cold. Yes, Jonathan and I only see each other once in a while, but you know, he makes sure that's a memorable event.
Sorry, dude. I really am sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. You're not the only, you know,
In fairness, there have been other sick people in your presence the last week or so.
Yeah, and I went to a meeting yesterday in a big wide boardroom, so I didn't have to sit next to people, and I had my mask on, and they're like, oh, your mask is freaking me out. I'm like, dude, you don't want me to take my mask off, and sure enough, after the meeting, they insisted, so I hope they enjoy your gift, too. Anyway, I'll find out in 4 days. Yeah, so first bit of fact check. Last week's episode was actually episode 32, not episode 31, because I'm not sure who copied the notes, but they didn't update the increment the number correctly. And again, like, why are we incrementing by end in 2023, whatever year this is, right?
We expect higher production quality next season.
Well, these things have been, you know, like, in Xcode, my build numbers automatically increment every time I do a build. I mean, like, it's not rocket science. I don't know why, you know, mind you, we're using our archaic thing called Google Doc. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Google Office, you know. Anyway, built for cavemen with computers. But let's head over to headlines. And Jonathan, you're up first while I blow my nose.
Yeah, we've got finally some great news on the strike front. So we've been talking for a while about the ongoing, first it was the writer's strike, and then it was the actor's strike, and they were simultaneous, and then the writers settled. And this week we got great news that the actors have finally settled their strike. And so back to work. It seemed like it happened, you know, there was sort of a little bit of rumbling that something might finally break. There was a few sort of behind the scenes stories out there that perhaps now that the writers had been back for a portion of time, their scripts were ready, they were ready to start shooting, and they needed to get this settled. But it kind of just sort of happened this week, and it happened very quickly. And very quickly after that, we started seeing this flood of responses from all these actors saying, oh, by the way, go see my thing. I laughed today when it was just ahead of the season finale of Loki, where there was a little video made with Kehi Kwan talking to the camera, saying, oh, this whole time I've been wanting to say thank you for all the nice things you've been saying about me being on the show, but I couldn't because I wasn't allowed because of the strike, but now I can. And it's very funny. I saw a promo earlier with Timothy Chalamet, who's going to be on Saturday Night Live, and he just kept coughing, going, Chocolate Factory, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, because he couldn't promote that whole movie when it came out. So yeah, it's all of a sudden there's going to be this glut of, please go see my movie. But this is good news. It sounds like they got it.
So the headline says tentative agreement.
That was just because I pasted the very first thing. This was, I think I pasted it in about 15 minutes after.
I'm going by what I read on Twitter, and it said, and somebody on Twitter said, the strike's not over until Jerry Ryan says it's over.
Well, fair. Yeah, no, it basically it came together very quickly, and in the evening it came together, and they basically said, you know, all of our recommendations are that this is signed, sealed, delivered. It just needs to be ratified, but it's very close. And yeah, so, I mean, it sounds like both sides are signed off on it. Now they just need the collective group to vote on it. But it sounds like the actors got what they wanted, and the Hollywood producers are happy with their end of it. And it sounds like we're ready to get back into the business of making entertainment. That being said, as we discussed in last week's episode, 2024 looks like it's going to be a little light because there's a lot of stuff that was pushed to the back burner. But at least it's over, and now we're going to start getting more and more casting rumors. They're going to start confirming dates. There's been lots of things that have been rumored to be happening that now hopefully we'll get some concrete details on. So stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of entertainment news over the next little while, I think.
And I think this is great timing with us going into hiatus after this episode, right?
Yes, absolutely. Hey, you want to stay abreast of what's going on out there? Please join our Slack channel. We were in there this week. We're sharing news. I did have a number one fan here tell me this week that he said, "Oh, I saw this happen." I said, "Where'd you see that?" He said, "On your Slack channel." I said, "There you go. Breaking news."
Yep, definitely. Definitely. Cool.
Yeah. Little Star Trek news for our Star Trek podcast. We got confirmation a few weeks ago that Prodigy, Star Trek Prodigy, the canceled, the missing link of Star Trek, if you will, on the Paramount Plus puzzle, is coming to Netflix. We know that they're going to have the second season in 2024, but now we know when we're going to get the first season. So Christmas Day is the day that it's all arriving. So Christmas Day, you're going to start seeing episodes, or the whole first season, that is, of Prodigy dropping on Netflix. So if you want to catch up, if you want to get out in front of it, if you missed it the first time, if you blinked and you missed it, then you can certainly check it out there.
So is Carmen Sandiego joining the cast?
Where in the world is Star Trek Prodigy?
Yep. Yeah, we still don't know when season two is ever going to... I forget. Did we see half of it or something?
They basically just said 2024. Yeah, 2024 is the timeline, but that's the very vague window for a lot of projects right now.
Okay.
Yeah, it all got bumped.
And this next one is really exciting. I think I saw this in the paper, but I think Jaime posted. I may have read it on Jaime's post too.
Yeah, I feel like this should have been bigger news in sort of our world for sure, but maybe even the regular mainstream news that I'll just read this Ars Technica title. After decades lost, Star Trek's original Enterprise model may have been found. So a 3-foot model appeared on eBay, apparently taken from an estate sale or something?
It disappeared from Gene Roddenberry's desk, apparently, at some point in the 70s or something like that.
Yeah. So somebody, you know, eventually found the Ark of the Covenant, and right next to that was this. Thoughts on this? I mean, there's still some people wondering, is this legit? I think as of now, the eBay listing was taken down. I don't know if this person is on the lam, if they're lawyering up. Who knows? There's a lot of drama.
The story I heard about the post being taken down, at least in the article I read, I don't know if it was the same one here, but that, I think it might have been on the news, because like on RCBC News, because they said that the person had taken it down, and that they were trying to settle it to get it back into the Roddenberry family. So yeah, because it was listed for $1,000 on eBay. I saw the listing, and it's interesting because it's, if you've seen pictures of William Shatner or Leonard McCoy holding, like in their uniform, holding a big model of the Enterprise, that's the model. And it actually, there's a picture in, I don't know if it's in, I haven't looked at this article, but in the Toronto Star or wherever I saw it, there was a picture of it sitting on Roddenberry's desk with him in the background. So yeah, it's pretty cool looking model. And apparently it was one of the filming models, like the, I guess, for the faraway shots, right?
Yeah. I mean, totally different character, but like, it belongs in a museum feels rather appropriate here.
They retrofitted. When I was at the Air and Space Museum in Dulles Airport, it was actually, you could see the, not the saucer section, but you could see the back end was in the workshop being worked on, right? And I remember when I was, I think I was about 8 or 9, going to Washington, D.C., wearing an Archie Bunker for President t-shirt. And we went to the Smithsonian, and I remember seeing that model in the Smithsonian Museum. It's like probably like 6 feet wide. It's huge, right? So yeah, No, it's got to be bigger than 6 feet. But yeah, it was like, again, another one of the shooting models. So it is technically been in the museum, but you're right. This 100%, all that stuff should be in the museum, right?
Yeah, apparently starting bid of $1,000 when it was up. And it's really difficult to call it priceless, but it definitely should be more than that.
I was going to say, I'll pay 10 now. Yeah. I'll start liquefying the comic collection. You let me know when I hit the right number.
And it's an ISO listing on Facebook Marketplace, right?
Yeah.
What else you get for us, I mean?
Let's see here. You know, we talked about the fact that a lot of the modern MCU stuff can be a little bit challenging, and we had talked about, you know, sort of narratively, you still want the main things to be understandable by mainstream people, and it should be an enhancement when you have, you know, seen everything as a completionist. So a little bit of a step in that direction. Marvel has put out the weirdly named Spotlight branding that is for things that aren't necessarily tied into the larger crossover. So I guess they could be one-offs, or hey, here's what's happening in like a dark alley in Hell's Kitchen. Doesn't really impact the large multiverse galactic scale type conflicts. It's a weird choice for me as a name, because it almost feels like, hey, we're putting a spotlight on stuff you absolutely don't need to watch. And I'm not saying you shouldn't watch. I'm not saying it's not going to be good stuff. I just feel like it needed some other naming to brand this, because Spotlight feels like, oh, you should definitely watch this one, you know, when you're in the spotlight because you're the star.
Well, it would have been cruel to call it what they really are doing to it, which is calling it the Marvel Fringes, and would have been a little mean to be like, this is the Fringe collection, you don't really have to watch it if you don't want to, this is only out on the fringes.
Yeah
I mean, it's canon, it's still canon, it's just what they're saying is basically, you know, take it or leave it. I think this is their way of trying to tell, you know, the casual Marvel fans, you can live without seeing this. But I wonder, like, it's interesting, this branding idea, and I'm glad you brought it up, Jaime. I'm curious if they will retroactively go back and start flagging other things. Although I was sort of circling in my mind the existing MCU content and thinking, you know, particularly the Disney Plus content that was created for Disney Plus, I was thinking, well, what could they do? I'm like, WandaVision? No. Falcon and the Winter Soldier? No. Loki? Maybe, but probably no. I was trying to figure out, like, what have they done so far that they could stick this on? Like, not Hawkeye. I guess they could slap it on the Netflix stuff, right?
And then,
you know, yeah, maybe this is what they do going forward. Midnight
or London?
Yeah, Werewolf by Night. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting. Or maybe even What If, right?
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how they deploy this little not fringe banner that they're putting on these things now.
Maybe they should put "in case you missed it" or something like that on it, right?
Or "feel free to miss it."
Well, my story here is The Creator, which is the movie I saw in IMAX. And it's a freaking amazing movie in IMAX to see. It's like very pretty. But I think we've talked about when these things come out, and I haven't done the math yet, but apparently it is going to be coming to digital on November 14th. And that means downloadable. I think a week later, it's going to be coming to Blu-ray and DVD, or Blu-ray, I guess. And then apparently sometime later, November 14th on digital, December 12th on Blu-ray and DVD, and then sometime later, unspecified date, it's going to come out on Disney Plus and Hulu simultaneously, like the last sort of thing did. So it's very interesting. You know, it'd be interesting to see what people think of this movie when they see it. Like I said, it's an interesting story, but it builds on a lot of the sort of tropes that we've seen in sci-fi in the past, right? But you know, it's very sort of Blade Runner-ish and you know, pretty. And from the dude, I've forgotten his name now, Garth, who did Gareth Edwards. Yeah. So I don't know if you guys are looking forward to seeing that or whatever, but
yeah, it's definitely on the radar. I don't know. Knowing that it's eventually coming to Disney Plus makes it a much more simple path. Yeah,
unfortunately, again, like I said, it was super pretty. I went to one of our bigger IMAX theaters and saw it, Scotiabank Theater, right? So
yeah.
They have an IMAX at Dundas and Young, but it's not. I stretch to say that's an IMAX, unless if you sit way back in the theater, it might as well just be a big screen, right? Other than, you know, the 12 speaker sound system or whatever. But Yeah, so now it's time for me to pull out my accessibility soapbox. I don't know if we've talked about this before. I'm surprised that in 2023, in November, we are having this conversation. Shame on you gamers out there for never raising this as an issue. But, and I don't know why this controller, which I'm going to be talking about, the Sony PlayStation Access controller, was introduced, I believe, at the beginning of the year. I don't know if we didn't talk about it. I was trying to look through our notes and see if we had. This news to you guys that we've ever talked about this controller? No? Okay, well, I'll explain to you what it is. It's a controller for people with disabilities to be able to play games on PlayStation. And I'm actually surprised and flabbergasted, never thought about this, so I'll take some of the shame too for this, that the controllers that come with PlayStations and Xboxes and stuff like that are not accessible. They're not for people who don't have, you know, working fingers and thumbs. It just is not possible for them to play games. And a lot of them have modified their existing controllers so they can hold them under their chin and, you know, do what they've done. There's like 3D printable hacks.
Yeah. There's definitely been like peripherals you can buy that have attachments and stuff.
Yeah. People have been able to hack their stuff. But I mean, I'm again, Sony, one of the, like, this is like saying Apple didn't do this, you know. Sony's not a small company. I'm surprised that they didn't have something like this. I mean, thank you for doing it and finally getting it out there and finally making it available to people. But yeah, it's for people who just don't have, you know, have disability issues in terms of being able to hold a controller, push the buttons, you know. But I mean, you can and again, like you said, Jonathan, with the 3D mapping and the fact, thankfully, the game creators have always made it possible to remap the controls, right? In most games, right? So yeah. Anyway, just that's my soapbox. Anytime I see something that, you know, about accessibility, that's like, why am I talking about this so late in the day? Gets my, you know, steam comes out of my ears. So yeah, that's it. Thoughts on that?
This is good. I've seen a equivalent one on the Xbox side. So nice to see Sony joining the fray.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes back to the same rules that we hope will apply across life. Everybody deserves to play. Everybody deserves access. Everybody deserves to, you know, be able to do all the things that everybody else can, irrespective of how many, you know, fingers, toes, and limbs they have.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. I mean, like, it's surprising. Like, you can get like a steering wheel that has the same, you know, the four game buttons built into it. You know, and you can use the paddles or whatever to do different things, or, you know, like, start a game by double tapping on the pads and stuff like that. But why they hadn't thought about doing this for regular disability people, not, I don't know, that's an oxymoron, but you know, just again, to it's, you know, and I'm surprised, like, I'm glad to hear that it came out, it hit the news, you know, this week. But yeah, so theme is still coming out of my ears. Soapbox being put away, and we'll head over to Jaime for some happy Nintendo news.
Yeah, it's still some weird news, which I've got other couple of links to be sort of commentary. So the headline is that Nintendo is making a live action Zelda movie. So surely the success of the Super Mario Brothers movie, the animated
because money film, right?
Yeah, and it's a weird choice if you ask me. First, worth noting, because we were just talking about Sony, this is a co-production with Sony. They're going to be footing 50-50 the bill. It's a little weird to me that they chose a live action film because, as I've thrown in another link here to this pun sort of partially intended, to a 1990s Japanese TV commercial for The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. It's a little difficult to get the very bright, cheerful, fantastical look of The Legend of Zelda translated into something that's live action. So this is sort of a weird choice. It certainly feels like a much more difficult road for them to go down. The other thing that I posted here was just sort of coincidentally a fan-made animation about The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, as if it was done in the Studio Ghibli style, like the Miyazaki film style. And that feels like, oh yeah, you're like 90% of the way there. Just write a script, throw it through this game engine, and then you're done. I'm you know, certainly going to withhold judgment until we see some trailers and castings and other things, but it just feels like a really, really challenging way for them to bring this property to life when, you know, people enjoyed the animated Super Mario Brothers movie. I just assumed Legend of Zelda would also be animated because it would fit really well. Any thoughts from either of you gentlemen on this?
Yeah, I'm with you, Jaime. I mean, the first choice, I think, would have been to do it in the anime style, in my mind. And the second choice would have been to do like the sort of 3D style, like you say, with the Super Mario one. To me, a live action just seems unnecessary. I don't know. I mean, there are multiple takes of the Zelda Link world across the different games. There's a more realistic style, and then there's obviously a much more cartoony style. I guess for me, I've always been a more of a fan of the cartoony style ones, like Wind Waker and Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass and stuff like that. So maybe that's why my mind goes there first. But I don't know. To me, it just seems like they can't do it like dark and gritty. It's not going to be Lord of the Rings. How do they do it and have it be like light and interesting and adventurous? I mean, again, we had this debate around the Lego movie. We all thought the Lego movie was a stupid idea. You never know what they can do with these things. But to me, it just seems like it would be a natural animated product.
So Zelda was one of the, if not the first, one of the first sort of 360 go anywhere you want kind of games.
Well, the original Zelda was a 2D, adventure game. There were other games of that ilk at its time, but that one really kind of captured people's imagination because it was one, well done, and two, it was beatable, which I think, you know, a lot of the games of that era were a little
hard to play.
Yeah, or just unnecessarily complicated. And you know, there was a few that sort of fit that same timeline. But Zelda, again, because of the popularity of the NES and because of the popularity of the genre at the time, it really just kind of captured people's imagination. It was particularly memorable because they made it in that sparkly golden case, which caught a lot of people's eye. It's not the best example of it, but it is certainly the most successful example of it, which is actually which would be the subtitle for Nintendo's playbook, right? Not necessarily the best version of it, but his most successful version of it.
And maybe it was the Ocarina I'm thinking of. The Ocarina was where he had the sort of, get on the horse and just ride sort of thing, right?
Yeah, there are definitely ones that were a lot more sort of, sort of started to explore that three-dimensional world, explore, go on side quests, that kind of stuff. You can trace the history of RPG gaming in the Zelda Link franchise from the mid-80s through till now.
Are you guys ready for a shocker?
You've never played a second of it.
Was it? Yeah, it was NES, so yeah, I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, I mean, we never had a Nintendo at the house, so that was one thing. But yeah, I mean, they've done a good job of keeping the franchise alive and vibrant by evolving it and not being afraid to take some chances. And that's why I was kind of surprised. Like, this seems like the most sort of conservative path they could take as far as the film goes, right? Well, we got a couple of trailers this week. We got a new trailer for Ghostbusters, or a first trailer, I should say, for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which is the sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife, the sort of reboot of the Ghostbusters franchise. And we also got Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, first teaser trailer this week, too. So two sort of big, potentially summer blockbustery kind of things, not so coincidentally dropped the day after the strike was settled. So I thought that was pretty interesting, but Ghostbusters, again, looks like they sort of got the band back together. They're back in New York City, where, of course, the first two movies took place. We see the trio of veteran Ghostbusters, the Dan Aykroyd, the Bill Murray, and Ernie Hudson. And then we also see the young Ghostbusters from the Afterlife movie. Yeah, Finn Wolfhard, and we see the Paul Rudd character. So basically it's sort of continuing on from there. And, you know, it's a pretty good trailer. It shows, you know, this sort of idyllic New York summer, and then all of a sudden there's this sort of mystery of this, you know, something, some evil spirit is haunting New York and is bringing this cold wave through, and, you know, yeah, I mean, it looks, I thought Afterlife was great. I really enjoyed it. I thought that was, I think the young woman's name is McKenna Grace, who played the lead in that, the young woman. I thought she was really, really good as the young teenage lead. And Yeah, I thought that there was definitely a lot of potential for them to go more with this. So I'm glad they're doing it. And yes, as teasers go, I'm in. Like, this looks like fun.
Yeah, no, it looked really interesting. Actually, it's funny. I just actually watched the Ghostbusters movie that nobody talks about.
The one with the Paul Feig one? The one with the...
2016.
All the women as the Ghostbusters. And I liked that movie. I thought it was like really enjoyable. Yeah, no, that movie is super funny, and I like all those actors. So yeah, Kristen Wiig, and
it was on a couple of weeks ago, and I think last weekend, I watched it again. I've seen it a few times, but and it's a good take. It's funny that the Ghostbusters thing, and even if you go back and watch the original two Ghostbusters, they're kind of weird, but they kind of hold up. I mean, you know, you've got what's his name that's retired? Rick Moranis is just hilarious.
And Annie Potts. And yeah, there's just so many good little bits in it. And yeah, I mean, the first one is a classic, just an all-timer. The second one, yeah, it's got some gaps in it, but it's still, you know, it's still a lot to enjoy there. I think it doesn't age quite as well. I like the idea. I like the concept. I like the humor. I think all these movies have been enjoyable, and I'm glad they're doing more.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they have the cameos, like even with Dan Aykroyd in the Lady Ghostbuster one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they'll get a cameo eventually if they keep this franchise going, if they could bring any of them back, or if they're all kind of sour after the somewhat misogynistic response to that movie.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the original Ghostbusters.
No, the Kristen Wiig and Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones. And yeah, that the tone of response to that one was really kind of disgusting. And I think it might have soured a bunch of them on wanting to be involved again. The other one that they dropped the trailer for was Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now, this is a weird one because I kind of feel like this rebooted Planet of the Apes thing had sort of played itself out. I thought the idea was that it was sort of a trilogy and they were doing the trilogy, and your mileage may vary. I think that there's certainly good things about the latest Planet of the Apes trilogy. I think there's things to really enjoy out of it. I thought the first one was a little weak, but I thought the second one was super strong, and then the third one was pretty good. A fourth one that looks an awful lot like a bit of a pseudo remake of the original 1960s version. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about this yet. It's a teaser trailer, not a lot of details, but a lot of the visuals are very reminiscent of the original Charlton Heston 1960s Planet of the Apes film. I'm curious. I'm curious, but I'm a little cautious on this one.
So for retrospect, I mean, I remember hearing about Planet of the Apes when it came out. I was like about 9 or so, and I remember kids had Planet of the Apes trading cards. It was like a big thing, right? But I didn't actually watch the original movie till it was on TV, and it was like in the mid 70s, right? And the time that I saw Planet of the Apes, the Charlton Heston one, they actually ran a making of, right? Because I know Dave Price was talking about it on our Slack channel about the rubber masks. Well, it was like one of the first times they had sort of done the foam prosthetics that they glue onto the actors' faces and stuff like that. And some pretty big name actors of the day played some of these characters, and they were completely hidden. But so the first movie came out, huge big blockbuster, you know, great twist story. I mean, even the Pierre Brulé book is really good if you want to read an interesting story. It's actually told from the perspective of an ape telling about mm-hmm. how this human went back to Earth. And Pierre Brulé wrote, he also wrote another story too that became a big, it might have been the French Connection. No, he wrote something that was a big movie at the time. It'll come back to me in a minute. But so that movie came out, and then, you know, shortly, I mean, of course, by the time I saw these, they had already been out for a while. So then the second one was Beneath the Planet of the Apes, where James Franciscus, who was a big TV actor, came and played a character looking for the Charlton Heston in the second movie. And that was, you know, and of course, they were worshiping the bomb, and it was almost like a scene out of Tommy where, there's a scene in Tommy where Marilyn Monroe is like the new deity that everybody's praying to. Well, the bomb was the deity. So it was almost like that played up. Although Beyond the Planet of the Apes came out before the movie Tommy came out. But And then they started doing what they did in the 70s, and they kind of sort of do it now, and they started driving it into the ground, like almost like Fast and Furious. Not that I've, no disrespect to people who like that movie. I've never seen one of them. I've seen bits and pieces of each one, but you know, it's just kind of like it's a franchise that works. And so they just bring it back out and they flog it around a bit more. So there was a third movie, and then I think the third movie was actually Escape from Planet of the Apes, and that's where this sort of reboot comes from. Cornelius and his Dr. Zaius, I think her name is. Zira and Cornelius. They're characters. They're talking apes. They come back in. They figure out how to do time travel and come back in time. Because the story is that, you know, because when you leave the Earth and the way that, you know, relativity works, you end up coming back to Earth in the future. Anyway, it's 70s, let's rewrite the rules. They use the ship that Taylor landed on the planet back on Earth with to go back in time. They find a way to get, you know, they go around the sun a couple of times like Spock would do, and then they end up, you know, in the past, right? And so they're in the 1970s, and they're running around New York, and they're, you know, they're being taken around into the White House, and they're being dressed, and like, because, you know, they're like a novelty, right? And of course, there's a faction that wants them to be snuffed out or whatever. I forget what the plot is, but at the time, she's pregnant, right? And she gives birth to an ape named Caesar, and they swap babies with a gorilla in a zoo. They end up in a zoo, like they're trying to hide from whoever's trying to kill them. So they swap babies. So the when they're caught and they're killed, Cornelius and Zira and the baby are killed, but it's not Caesar, right? And then we find out that the gorilla raises Caesar, and then of course, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes was the movie where Caesar, who grows up, and Roddy McDowall played both the father and he played Caesar in that one. And of course, he teaches all the apes to revolt and take over and escape from, you know, whatever this is how the evolution of apes taking over the Earth starts, is with this ape named Caesar, who is his own grandfather, kind of thing, you know, like one of those Fry things from Futurama. And then they really drove it home. Then they had the Battle of the Planet of the Apes, which they really started to lose it. It just became like, let's get, you know, because money, let's get this out there again. And that, you know, it became the humans who now were suddenly able to speak and have a little bit of society, whereas they were wild and untamed and feral in the first movie. They now have developed, you know, technologies and skills, and they know how to ride horses and carts and whatever. And they, but apparently it's like, it's led by these astronauts who will keep coming back and in time, or coming forward in time. I don't know how that works. But then they made it into a TV show, right? And all the way through, Roddy McDowall is in this series. He was like the C-3PO of the Planet of the Apes. Kept coming back in another role. But the TV show was okay. It was on in the late 70s, 76, somewhere in there. And it ran for a couple of seasons, and it was like, if you were into this, which, you know, you got to remember the time, you know, it was either watch this or the Brady Bunch, you know, or Fantasy Island or something, right? So yeah, so you watched Logan's Run on TV, which became a TV show. You watched Star Trek reruns because there was no TNG.
Battlestar Galactica. Buck Rogers.
Buck Rogers, exactly. But and so they were all sort of in that same milieu of TV shows that you would watch, and but they kind of drove it into the ground. And it wasn't until Tim Burton did the reboot of Planet of the Apes, that of the original movie, that with Marky Mark, right, and his girlfriend / wife Bellatrix from Harry Potter, you know what I mean? Anyway,
Helena Bonham
Carter. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Just she's got to be in every one of his movies, right? But so it's kind of interesting that now that it's and then they went back and they did the thing with James Franco and John Lithgow and this new and Andy Serkis acting as Caesar, right? And now we've got the sort of, you know, the Gollum becomes an ape, becomes, because Andy Serkis, you know, like what we were joking about a couple of years ago, that Andy Serkis isn't going to win an Academy Award for performance. It's going to be somebody playing him that wins it, you know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's still my favorite theory, is that somebody's going to win for a mocap performance of Andy Serkis. Yeah,
exactly. Or he'll win for like 30, going over 30 on 13 on going 13 going on 30 for his, you know, whatever. Yeah, because I think that's the first time I ever saw him as a human being. But so it's an interesting franchise. And so, I mean, I don't go to the theater to watch these, but because to me, like, the Planet of the Apes has sort of a kind of pulling at the heartstrings the way Star Trek and Star Wars do for me, right? So it's kind of like, it's another one of those franchises that, yeah, I will consume this. And yeah, I saw the James Franco one in the theater probably, and then the rest I just waited till they came on TV or digital or whatever. But yeah, this one actually looks pretty interesting to me, considering that, you know, they've kind of, the technology's evolved to the point where it's believable. You know, I don't know if Andy Serkis is in this one. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe he'll play an elder statesman or something. The last one was pretty good I didn't like the Willie Harrison character, but I liked the way the struggle of the apes was portrayed, you know, the different classes, because that was another thing about the Planet of the Apes is that they had different classes. The gorillas were all warfaring kind of people. The chimpanzees were sort of the middle manager intellectuals, right? The professors and stuff like that. And then the orangutans were the sort of the higher, more statesman class, right? So it's interesting to see how those roles are kind of replicated in these remakes, right? So, yeah, that's my bit on this. So I am looking forward to it.
I got two pieces of real-time fact check for you. So Pierre Boulez also wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai, which became Bridge on the River Kwai, Oscar award-winning film. He won the Oscar for Best Screenplay, but only because the people who actually wrote it got blacklisted during McCarthyism. And I looked up, and it does not look like Andy Serkis is involved with this.
Oh, man, movie. I'm not going to go see it then.
But it's supposed to be set generations after the events of the first trilogy. So it's supposed to be a little in the futures, which, all right, fine. But yeah.
But it's supposed to have some sort of parallel storytelling to the original movie, is what I'm getting from what I'm hearing, right?
That's what it looks like. Yeah. Basically, humans have regressed into being sort of feralistic, which is what we saw in the original. And the apes are the civilized. And yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Tim. I enjoy these movies a lot, but I probably would never go see one in the theater. Jaime, are you a fan?
I have not kept up with the new trilogy quadrology, I guess, now. But given what I'm seeing in the trailers, it feels like they could make a whole bunch more movies before they eventually looped back around to Charlton Heston replacement time.
Yeah, really?
Well, Christopher Plummer. Oh, never mind.
Christopher Plummer deep faking Charlton Heston.
Didn't we establish that we've lost our beloved Canadian treasure, his daughter should play all over?
Or you know what, maybe Schwarzenegger's kid could play the Taylor character.
Oh well, yeah, he's in stuff now. Yeah,
it all goes around.
And the last bit of news I had this week was just like, I apparently spoke something into existence, which is always kind of fun. We were joking last week that, Jaime, you mentioned that Disney was poised to acquire the last portion of the Hulu app that it didn't own. They were going to purchase the last third that they didn't own. And I said, oh, it's just a matter of time before they start bundling. And then they're going to make the rack up prices and stuff. It took like, what, 4 days, 5 days? How long was it after we talked about that?
Yeah. You know, you should start buying stock, right? You know that. That's what that means, right?
I seriously feel like it's at a certain point, we got to start putting this money, putting our money where our mouths are here. But sure enough, they announced this week that Bob Iger himself announced that they're going to test pilot the merging of Hulu content with Disney Plus content, which is essentially what we have here in Canada already, right? It's a strange one, though, because, you know, what do you do? Like, Jaime, if you have a Hulu subscription and a Disney Plus subscription, that's probably, I'm guessing, more than we pay for just the single source that we get up here. They wouldn't want to lose the revenue stream. So how do they do that and get their money's worth out of it?
I don't know. And I got to double check when they had announced the bundle stuff. I guess I looked a little prematurely and there was no obvious way to migrate to the bundle from either Disney Plus or Hulu. So maybe they will very soon have that, or if they do already have in check, available. At least that would give me a hint of what they might try to do. I think maybe what they can do is do what HBO Max, or simply Max if you prefer, recently did, which is we're keeping your price the same, but you're technically on a lower tier now because they, what did they do? They reduced simultaneous streams on Max that went from 3 to 2. And I think they moved 4K to a different tier, to a higher tier. So maybe they'll do something like that of like, well, it's technically the same, but not really as good kind of thing, you know? And then say, oh, you're like in the higher tier. And now the lower tier is like, okay, this is where we expect people to come in. It's more than Disney Plus or Hulu alone, but it's a much more palatable price. Probably with the ads tiers as a way to help be a stopgap for any holes in where they would want you to go.
Yeah. Yep. Well, as we've said before, you know, I think the best hope as a consumer is that we do see some consolidation of these apps so that we are less fragmented. Although if they're just going to keep jacking the price on all of them, we're really also not winning. So yeah, hopefully this is at least a step in the right direction.
And we're getting a new Disney Plus app that's going to incorporate, well, in the States, going to incorporate Hulu. We already have the Star stuff in ours, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I guess I'm going to have to marry the two accounts together too, like in terms of like the different databases and stuff, which is always fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet you there'll be, I think it'll, like if I had to predict, I think it won't be the weird mess that Max went through migrating to Max from HBO Max. I would suspect they'll just absorb into Disney Plus. So if you are only a Hulu subscriber, you got to probably go do a little migration dance.
Reset your password or something like that.
2FA codes or some sort of link sort of thing. If you're already in Disney Plus, they'll probably say, okay, click this button, you know, click this button to log in Hulu. Great. Now you're migrated. Yeah. Have a couple of different paths to get there, what I suspect.
Is there a lot more content on Hulu than there was, like there was available elsewhere?
I got to double check. If we're talking base Hulu, they have their own originals, but I feel like it was largely for, you know, other things that would come out on traditional Fox news channels, and not the news Fox News. I mean, like, you know, like where you would have seen Married with Children and The Simpsons and, you know, those sorts of things, broadcast Fox stuff and FX. And then they'd also seem to have some pretty good partnership with some anime studios because there was a fair amount of anime stuff on there as well. I didn't check to see if it was with like Crunchyroll or Funimation or something like that.
Yeah, I think Hulu used to be one of the first streaming channels as services as well, I think, because remember I used to have a Hulu account back in the day before they realized it was in Canada. But I'm thinking of like way back, like 2010 or something like that. And like I don't know if Netflix was even around back then or just starting. I mean, they were doing the DVD thing where you could mail the discs in. But all right, well, that brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek. Oh, wait a minute, there's no Star Trek. Okay, show's over. Oh, wait, no, there is. We can talk about Loki, the finale, season finale, series finale, question mark, spoilers, of Loki, season 2, episode 6, Glorious Purpose. And we can dive right in with our elevator pitches. Who wants to go first? Okay, I'll go first. This was a waste of time.
This way, whoa, harsh.
No, it's from the show.
It's just a waste of time. I had Loki finally stops slipping and learns there's rarely enough time to escape one's destiny.
Yeah, this one's not quite so great because it's, you know, without any time to really absorb it. So.
welcome to our week, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't even that long ago, but I was trying. It's like, round and round we go. Loki has to make a Sylvie's choice and determine, ooh, what does God need with a Jefferson airplane?
Yeah. Mm.
It's crunchy, you know. Yeah. There's not a lot great there, but it's, it was crispy. Meant to try to weave all these threads together, pun very much intended, right?
yeah
my favorite, I know you probably have it in the thing where he's like, how long would it take me if I wanted to learn everything about, you know, science and technology and engineering, and how long would it take me?
Centuries.
And then captain comes up, centuries later.
Yep. Well, that's Groundhog's Day, right? Go back, learn how to play the piano, learn how to carve ice.
Yeah.
You do all the tricks. Yeah, this was a pretty epic finale, all things being equal. You know, I think all eyes were on it. Loki probably had the best finale of any Disney Plus Marvel series so far. I'm going to stand by that statement. And that was as far as season one, I'm saying. This was obviously potentially the end of the whole run, and they had a lot of lifting to do because this season was kind of a little all over the place, not in a bad way, but it was complex and it was timey-wimey and there was a lot of emotion and character depth and stuff to get through. But I'd say overall, I think they stuck the landing pretty decently. I don't know that everybody's going to be in love with it, but I think there's certainly a lot of there.
Yeah. The other elevator pitch for this is you could say Loki finally got his throne too.
Well, that was my final line in here was Loki on his throne. Yeah. Cause that was what he talks about in the very first episode is, you know, burdened with glorious purpose. He is destined to be on a throne. And of course he does in the end get his throne, just not in the way that he ever imagined. Right. Yep.
So the pew pew, best pew pew.
Yeah, I had Loki's walk, that bit where he walks outside and he walks off and he grabs the time stream and he, you know, does all the magic and then he sort of becomes the god of stories, and which I'll get into in a second. And yeah, I thought that was really quite cool and epic.
To me, it was interesting. I think the if I had to sort of pick the best sort of struggly part was it reminded me. Like he had to keep replaying the loop, and like you said, the Groundhog Day, you know, learning to carve ice and learning to win the girl kind of thing. It felt a bit like, you know, when you're playing a video game and you're playing a level that's particularly difficult. You have to go through like 27 different things to get to the point where you can hit the keys all at the right time, and because that's kind of sort of what he's doing. He has to get everything to hit, and he's just replaying. He's gone back and learned, you know, engineering. He's spewing out all the technology and pushing all the players into position and getting everybody ready to go and saying, I don't have time to explain it. You'll just have to follow me and trust me and whatever kind of thing. And it felt a bit like that sort of angst you get when you're playing a video game that you got to beat this boss level, but you got to have all these skills ready to go kind of thing. You can't just walk into the level and beat it, right? And that's sort of, and you play it like 1,000 times till you get it just right, right?
That's actually a really smart analogy, Tim. The idea that essentially that's what he's doing is replaying a video game level over and over in real time. You know, you have another life, keep going. You have another life, keep going.
Yep. And then you figure out, okay, well, maybe if I do that one thing slightly different, I can get to here quicker. I mean, there's plenty of games that I play. Like there's levels on Lara Croft. There's Gran Turismo races that you learn how to, you over time, you learn the skill you need to get to beat the level, which is what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
New game plus is how some people on the internet describe this, where you already know all the tricks and you're just trying to speed run to see the alternate endings.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we used to play Sonic, and Jonathan and I used to play Sonic on the original on Master System. Was it, well, not Master System, the one after that.
Well, we had the Genesis and the Master System.
All we used to ever do was play the first level and see how fast we could get through the first level.
Yep, speed running. Yeah. Yep. Did you guys have different pew pew pew?
Well, mine was the one I just talked about playing the game over and over again.
Yeah.
I seconded the Loki walks the green mile.
Yeah, the green mile. Yeah, absolutely. For Easter eggs, so there was a couple of really good ones. So we talked about it in the previous episode. So Renslayer getting dispatched. So I guess that was in episode 4, right? She gets not killed, right? It's not strictly speaking killed. She gets pruned. Yeah. And so she ends up in, you know, the same place that Loki did in season one. And so here we finally see her ultimate fate where she wakes up and she's the same place that Loki was before. And we hear the growl of Alioth, the giant wolf cloud monster thing, and know that that's, she's going to actually meet her ultimate fate in the end, okay. Right?
I was wondering what that noise was.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be like, so if you remember the episode where Loki goes and discovers, you know, Crocodile Loki or Alligator Loki and all the other Lokis and, in that episode.
Essentially, this end of season one, basically, right?
I think it was the fifth episode of season one, where they get stuck there and Alioth is this giant sort of monstrous being that basically consumes the people who are, who are stuck there. So, yeah, I think the idea is that Renslayer is finally going to get her comeuppance for being the person she is, especially in the wake of Mobius telling the story about how she burned a child. So,
right.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, back to the show.
There's a scene in near the end where B-15 and Mobius are at his desk, and he says, I've got the files on the variants of He Who Remains. And he says, there was a thing on Earth 616. 616 is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and he's referring to the incident in Quantumania with Kang. So that's if you were looking for the tie in there, that's where that ties.
Oh, that's
into
the sticky note where the file you were asked for was.
Yes. And then, so for people looking for a greater context of sort of what has become of Loki in the comic books, Loki has sort of evolved from being the god of lies and the trickster god. At a certain point, he does sort of have this sort of epiphany where he sort of absorbs all these versions of himself and accepts all of the different parts and aspects of himself. And he sort of takes on this new role as the god of stories. And so you'll probably, if you're trolling around the internet or you're looking at socials over the next few days, you'll probably see reference to the god of stories, which is essentially what the role we find Loki in at the end of this episode, where he is the one holding on to and contributing to these timelines. Essentially, he is contributing to, that's why they're green, right? That's why the timelines turn green. He's contributing to the evolution of these timelines as the god of stories. So I recommend some really good stories. Kieran Gillen and a few other creators over the past number of years have done some really cool stuff with Loki that are worth checking out in the comic book side.
Cool. Yeah, it's kind of interesting imagery. So my big question is also the Easter egg of like Loki seemingly creating the Yggdrasil, the Norse tree of life.
Yep.
And I did some further digging into Loki, and apparently in some versions, he is sort of meant to become bound for completely different reasons because of his involvement in the death of Baldur, a different god. But bound, and you know, in the different tellings, not like this Loki. Every time the earth shakes, is because Loki is trying to avoid getting poison from a snake that is there to torture him as he's bound. Not quite the same here.
Perpetually drops venom into his mouth, right?
Yeah, and here fate. It's not exactly the same, but it's not that different of like, you know, the Sylvie's Choice bad joke I was trying to make. It's like he had to sort of choose between, you know, He Who Remains said you can't have her. If you have her, then everything dies, and you need me. And Loki found another way to not have Sylvie die, but he effectively is dead to her, right? He's not involved with her anymore. He can't spend time with her because he's got this greater glorious purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there's a lot of layers to this one, and not, and again, in an unsatisfying way. Sometimes they get overly complicated in these stories, trying to sort of resolve it all. But I thought this was actually, as things go, to have taken Loki on this journey from, you know, kind of a petulant and dislikable, you know, jerk from the beginning of this series to, you know, finding his true purpose, to finding, you know, the idea of self-sacrifice, the notion that he's not going to simply kill Sylvie because it's the convenient thing to do, that he has a larger role to play. I thought that his character arc for these 12 episodes over two seasons is pretty satisfying. And certainly better than being choked out by Thanos and thrown out like a piece of garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You ready for some quotes?
Sure.
A little bit of a throwaway line early in the episode when he's trying to sort of go back and reset time and reset time. Loki says, "I wasted time and now time wasted. Now the time wasted me." I thought that was really well written. When he's trying to hurry through and, you know, speed up the timeline. Introductions. Ouroboros, this is Victor Timely. Victor Timely, this is Ouroboros. Guess what? The TVA handbook? You both wrote it. Isn't that amazing? when he's trying to, you know, figure out how to fix things using quantum physics. Let's assume I don't know much, but I'm a fast learner and I'm a god. Then Victor Timely, I thought this was good. The loom will never be able to accommodate for an infinitely growing multiverse. You can't scale for infinite. It's like trying to divide by zero. It can't be done. Like, that's one for your math nerds out there.
Mm-hmm.
The He Who Remains, again, I thought the performance was really fun. You know, Jonathan Majors, you know, legal issues notwithstanding, he is a good actor. And the part when he's back being He Who Remains, you know, and around and around and around we go. Just knowing that time is looping and that no matter how hard Loki tries, he thinks he's trapped him in this loop where he knows, you know, the best path forward is just to simply kill Sylvie, but Loki's not going to have it that way. And then, Mobius's line I thought was really good. Got to keep the big picture in mind, which again, really sort of is one of the lines that crystallizes things for Loki as to how he can get out of this mess. And I could have written down like 10 more. There's a lot of good lines in this episode.
For me, I didn't write down the actual pacing of this, but you'll get the point. It's He Who Remains telling Loki, "Don't tell me you haven't learned how to pause time yet." Kind of just having fun with that. I didn't get the exact pacing, but you get the point.
Yeah. 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 He was definitely, yeah, again, good performances across the board, too. I thought across this episode, like, everybody was really kind of bringing their A game for this finale. All right, so the big question, the big aha. So this was highly anticipated. Probably the highest approval rating of all the Disney Plus Marvel shows. Loki Season 1, the first one to get a Season 2. And, you know, I think overall, I'm pretty happy with what they did. But what comes next? So today is also the premiere of The Marvels, which is the last Marvel cinematic universe thing we're going to get in 2023. But how does all this tie into what's next? You know, we've already gotten an announcement that we're going to get, you know, a Kang, Avengers-centric Kang movie. We know that through the rumor mill that the new Deadpool 3 movie that's supposed to come out next year is supposed to be very multiversey, timey-wimey, bringing back, you know, Old Man Logan, bringing back some familiar faces. There's even a rumor out there that Mobius might be in that movie. Does this Loki as the god of stories, Loki as, you know, the tree of life holding together all of the multiverse, does this logically spin into the next thing? Do we see Loki again at all, or is this it?
Yeah, interesting.
I think they'll bring him back and have it be a big key part. The interesting part of how they will have to do it is, how do you get people up to speed with why is he there, what's going on, so you don't have to have had to watch all of Loki. Certainly we will enjoy it more for having gone through this journey, but trying to think about how are they going to loop them into things and have it be sensible to people who didn't watch what happened.
Well, you just slap a Marvel Spotlight logo on it. Yeah. Didn't we establish that's how you get rid of this stuff? Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, Tom Hiddleston is one of, for me, the real revelations of the last, you know, 13 years of Marvel storytelling, right? I'm a huge fan. He was just somebody who grabbed me. I'd never seen him before, and now I would watch him do pretty much anything. He's one of my favorite performers. This role is so memorable, his being Loki. And I've seen him in other things since, and I think he's a terrific performer. You know, I think this one, almost the only thing that's missing from it is the thing that I found. We talked about it in the Star Trek Picard versus Star Wars last trilogy debate, right? Star Trek Picard gave fans what they wanted. They wanted to see Data back with Geordi. They wanted to see Picard back with Riker and Crusher. They wanted to see all of these people who we love back together again, interacting with each other. And what we didn't get, and one of the reasons why a lot of people don't like the most recent trilogy of Star Wars films, is because we got Luke and we got Han and we got Chewie and we got, you know, Carrie as Princess Leia, but we never got them back together. We never got those kinds of moments, those moments where they were, you know, the gang back together.
Lucky. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if it will ever be satisfying if this evolved version of Loki never connects with Thor.
Yeah, I kind of wonder that. Like, how do they go? I mean, like, he has been time slipping for centuries here, but will he go off and have adventures? And where does this timeline fit in with, you know, the snapping and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, is it better for Thor to have moved forward?
Doesn't he get killed by Thanos? Yeah.
Thanos. Yeah. It's the very first scene of Infinity War is the scene on board the ship where we see Heimdall get killed, and then we see Loki get killed.
And he steals the cube thing, right?
Yeah, the idea is that you know, that's how Loki, or that's how Thanos gets his second Infinity Stone, right? He gets the cube from Loki, and he crushes it, and he's got a second stone. And it's the motivation. It's what drives Thor through that first movie, is the revenge for watching his brother die, and then leads to him becoming the overweight, depressed Thor in the second movie because he kills Thanos at the beginning, and then he feels this huge like lack of closure in the fact that it didn't really matter, it didn't mean anything, and then finally he sort of gets it all together again. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, those characters are so inextricably linked. It always feels like, it almost felt a little weird. Now again, it's a different stage of the character. This is this version of Loki never engaged in the events of Thor the Dark World or of Thor Ragnarok. So this is a different timeline character.
He's a variant.
He is. But it also still kind of feels weird that there isn't a little bit more closure with those two characters. And I wonder if that's going to come back as part of this whole wrapping up of phase, what are we on, 5, 6 of the MCU?
Nobody knows.
Well, we'll find out in 2020 something when they finally make these movies after all these strikes and delays.
All right, should we move on to the watch list?
Yes, let's do it.
All righty. So my first watch list thing I have on here, well, I'll talk about the second thing first and the first thing second. The second thing I have on here is Crown Season 6 is coming out, which is wrapping up the legacy of Queen Elizabeth and her family. And I thought I saw the trailer's all about Diana and the death of Diana and stuff like that. But I saw that Kate Middleton had been cast. Somebody was playing her. So I kind of wonder how that fits into the grand scheme of things of this story. Mind you, it's like 6-8 episodes long kind of thing.
Mm.
But the one that I want to talk about is called Bodies. And I don't know if you guys have seen this. I think, yes, on Netflix. It's an interesting story. It takes place in four time. It's timey-wimey, so, which is, again, another good reason why I like it. Starts off in, I think, 1890, 1943, 2023, and 2053. And in all of those times, there's a body discovered in this one particular alley that has is completely naked and has been shot through the eye and basically dies, right? And so, and each one of them is discovered by a detective who then has to sort of figure out how the body got there and how it's connected and the people who were around at the time. And then it's the whole character who's got the time machine as he becomes his own great, great grandfather. So it's like, again, the Fry thing, right? So, but it's really interesting the way it's told. It's kind of put together like a detective story that they all four of them have to sort of figure out how this body got there and what the sort of the conspiracy behind it is, like how, you know, who's the sort of reason, why is this body there and how does it sort of connect and that kind of stuff. And it's interesting because it's I think it's 8 episodes long. The first 6 episodes are just sort of the detectives trying to figure this stuff out. And then they start sending each other messages through time. Like they carve things into the bricks and stuff like that. Like almost like, you know, how Mobius wrote, you know, dust on the monitor thing. Right. And then the 7th episode is kind of the retelling of the story, like told in chronological order to put all the pieces together. And then the final one is sort of the how do they wrap it up? How do they solve it? How do they, you know, fix the problem that has been caused by this particular body traveling through time, dead body, right? So it's really, really interesting story. And the reason I started watching it, it's all British cast. And, but I thought what was interesting for us is it stars Kyle Soler, who played Cyril Khan on the movie with Diego Luna.
Andor.
Thank you. Yeah, you know our man Cyril.
Yes.
So
with his mom. Yeah.
He plays
his mom in it.
He plays the 1890s detective. Yeah.
Is it a limited series or a movie?
Yeah, it's a limited series. Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. And then that's my pick. So we'll throw over to Jaime.
Yeah, a couple of picks here. It took me forever to get around to watching Extrapolations on Apple TV Plus, which is kind of a weird series in that it doesn't feel so much like fiction as it feels like I got to get a sneak preview of some documentary from the future of like things that were going to happen around climate change and how society changes around that. Recommend it for folks. It's definitely not a feel-good kind of show, at least not to me, because it felt a little too real with all of the terrible weather in this past years.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
So maybe the bookend.
I hadn't heard of that one. Must have missed it. When's it from? Oh, it's 2023, so it's pretty new.
Is it a 2023? Okay, it must have been early March. I feel like I got to it late, so maybe it's not too late compared to other folks. That's one you can watch. Maybe bookend that with yet another streaming service is out there now. But don't worry, it's called NASA Plus, and it's free without advertising and somehow doesn't have a subscription. So I don't really know what's plus about it. I guess they wanted to lean into that kind of marketing. It's available on, you know, Roku, Apple TV, Android, and iOS devices. You can watch live broadcasts as they happen. You can watch historic content like lunar landings and stuff.
Well, we get NASA TV with our healthcare package, right? So,
yeah, this is one of those. You all have socialized sci-fi. We have socialized sci. That's a key difference there.
Well, I think I have the NASA app. I wonder if it's just the branding's changed on it, because I have the NASA app on my TV because I watch launches and all that stuff all the time. But we also do have a NASA channel on our TV, and we get like high def.
Yeah, I watch that one from time to time. They'll do like cool little triptychs and video and stuff and history stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What do you got, John?
All right. So I watched, I think I talked about a few episodes back, the new Lego Marvel Avengers sort of mini movie. It's longer than a TV show, but it's shorter than a movie on Disney+. It's called Lego Marvel Avengers Code Red. you know, these things are fun. It was, I just put it on, was looking for something really light one night. And, the basic premise is that, the collector from Guardians of the Galaxy, the collector is trying to collect all of the characters who have red in their name. So, Red Hulk, Red She-Hulk, Red Hulk, all these different, iterations across, a team of Avengers, which is, pretty progressive. It's got, Sam as the Captain America character, along with Steve as a Captain America character. And yeah, it's silly, it's fun, it's light. If you're looking for something to throw on and just sort of, chill out while you're just sort of, hanging out and doing your own thing, it's definitely exactly what you'd expect. But yeah, it's not high art, but it definitely hits exactly what you'd expect it to hit. And the next couple things I've got are all things that are coming out over the next week that I'm sort of keen to get at. So The Killer, which is the new David Fincher movie, is coming out on Netflix on November 10th, mm-hmm. which is the Friday. I'm a Fincher fan. I've seen almost all of his films and enjoy his work. I think he's a really interesting filmmaker. This one's particularly of interest because it's based on a comic book, which I have read and enjoyed. Really interesting. It's about a hitman, obviously. It looks really interesting. I've watched a couple of the trailers. I like some of the actors who are in it, and so I'm really keen to see this. It is playing in the theaters as well, though it's in a bit of a limited release. I'm a little conflicted. On one hand, I'm like, cool, it's gonna be on my TV like this weekend. On the other hand, I feel like, should I want to see this on a bigger screen? I haven't seen all of the Fincher movies on big screen, but I've certainly seen a bunch, and I feel like he makes interesting looking films. And I don't know, I'm a little conflicted about that one, but it is gonna be right there if you have Netflix for you, so you can choose your own adventure. The next one I've got is Rebel Moon Part 1. So this is the Zack Snyder thing that he was doing sort of post Justice League. This was supposed to be a Star Wars movie. Then they were like, yeah, no, this isn't going to be a Star Wars movie. And he's like, fine, I'm going to make this movie anyways. And sort of, so he turned it into his own thing. This is Part 1. Part 2 is coming out in early 2024. I think it's February, March, something like that. Trailer looks good. I mean, Zack Snyder, his movies can often be a little bit sort of poor on the story character side, but really interesting visual. I think he's a really brilliant visual filmmaker. So I must admit, I'm kind of conflicted on this one too. I really want to see it, but I'm not sure I want to listen to it. So I'll be definitely taking this one with a cautious approach. But I mean, there's no arguing that Snyder can direct the hell out of an action sequence. He really has an interesting eye for dynamic action and really capturing intensity of motion. And so I'm curious to see this. But again, weird because it's a Netflix thing, and yeah, of course we all have widescreen DVDs and TVs now, but it's maybe movie theater, I don't know. And the last thing I had on here is Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. This is a more faithful adaptation of Brian Lee O'Malley's famous graphic novel series. It's going to be on Netflix starting on the 17th of November. It is something that I'm looking forward to very much. It basically is going back and telling the same story that you saw in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the sort of cult classic movie from about a decade ago. All the same performers that were in that are all playing their voice characters in this. So everybody, including Chris Evans, Brie Larson, everybody, all the famous people, they're all apparently, they've all stayed friends. They're all really into it, and they're all coming back to do their parts on it. And it's going to be a little bit more, as far as the animation style, it's all animated. And as far as the story, it's going to be a little more faithful to the comic, which is a little more, believe it or not, even nerdier than the movie was, as far as the lots of video game references, lots of anime references, lots of Toronto references. So yeah, very cool that this is finally going to take form. And it's actually funny, I just heard through the grapevine that Brian's going to be here in Toronto next week. He's doing a signing at The Beguiling in Toronto. I believe it's on the 13th. 13th. He's going to be at the Beguiling doing a signing. And of course, I'm going to be in Vancouver. So it sucks, but c'est la vie. You know, I've been lucky enough to meet Brian a few times. And yeah, if you get a chance, if you hear this and you're interested, go down and meet Brian, because he's a good dude and it's just all good timing.
Cool. And did you notice there's a short Wes Anderson on one of the streaming services?
It's on Netflix. Yeah. Yeah, that was about a month ago.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't watched it yet, but.
Yep, with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm. Henry Sugar, right?
Yep.
Wonderful World of Henry Sugar. Cool. All right, well, I guess that's it for another week and another season, it looks like. So, Jonathan, people were in touch with you. Where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter or X, and on Instagram is @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
And isn't there a Slack channel that you hang out on?
And I love our Slack channel, and big shout outs this season to Dave and to who am I missing? Keen, Dave and Keen. You guys have been great this year, really engaged, and it's a lot of fun to hang out with you on there. So tell a friend. It's a lot of fun to get a chance to connect with you guys on there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And Jaime, people want to touch up with you? Where do they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. And as ever, my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A. By the way, we didn't talk about...
On the torture machine.
We didn't talk about Richard Mall yet. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Richard Mall. That's for the after show.
Yeah, after show. Yeah, stick around with that. So, yeah. So, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A on the Twitter machine and the Mastodon machine and the... Yeah, all the places. Blue Sky, Threads, Instagram. Yeah, and also Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Slack channel. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
So Jonathan's referring to the AI that I'm using to do the translations. And it said, Timitra on the torture machine. Yeah.
Which is probably the most accurate thing that's ever been done by one of those machines.
Yes, it's true. That's true. It's pretty torturous over there on the torture machine. So you've written here Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, so this is my contribution for the after show. I got the note from the good folks at Apple that they want to raise my Apple TV Plus price by $4 a month, and no, that's not happening. So I'm dropping Apple TV Plus at the end of this month, especially given, well, one, Ted Lasso's over, and two, given the strikes and everything else, we are a ways away from season two for Silo and for Foundation, which are the other two things that I'm most interested in. And so I am applying the Lopez calculus on this front and saying I do not need to be giving my, I think what they're looking for now is $13 or $14 a month for Apple TV Plus while I'm not using it a lot. So that's why I wanted to tap into you two experts and say, okay, I've got 3 weeks left of Apple TV Plus, and I have two cross-country plane flights to take in the next week.
Lessons in chemistry.
What are the things
lessons in chemistry
I should be watching?
Lessons in chemistry.
Lessons in chemistry?
Yeah. For All Mankind starts next week.
So is that going to be, that's season three or season four?
Yeah, who knows? It's all made up. It's all imaginary. It's not real. What else is on Apple TV Plus? It's good. I mean, a ton of stuff I watch on Apple TV. Well, here, Apple TV, probably Ted Lasso, Lessons in Chemistry, Invasion.
I would say the After Party. I've only seen season one and partway through season two.
But there's two seasons out of that one. I haven't watched season two yet. Invasion is a good one. What else was good on here?
Slow Horses is amazing.
You must watch Slow Horses.
Supposed to be really good, but then I know that the new season to that's coming as soon as I plan on canceling it. I was like, oh damn you. So I might save that one for next time because I know I'm gonna re-up with it when they bring back
stuff. Of all the stuff that I've mentioned so far, like Slow Horses would be at the top of the list. So do not pass go, do not collect $200.
Did either of you watch Platonic?
No, not yet.
The Seth Rogen one?
Sort of on the list.
Yeah, I like Rose Byrne and I like Seth Rogen, and the trailer made me laugh, and I was like, maybe.
They showed the trailer too many times, and I just kept thinking, meh.
Yeah.
Never really got into it. Palmer was a good movie, if that's on there. Finch was a good movie. It's better on the app, it's horrible, but on the TV, on the actual TV, it tells you what's on Apple, coming to Apple TV Plus.
It was like movies and stuff that I'm probably forgetting, but you've got series like, or limited series like We Crashed.
You've watched Foundation already, right?
Yeah, I've watched Foundation, I watched Silo, and I enjoyed those a lot. But I find it's, of all the services that I own, it's the one that I find myself looking at.
Did you watch Severance?
Regularly? No, I find myself looking at it regularly, but not watching regularly. And when I started breaking down the money, especially because I had to throw the coins in the fountain for Paramount Plus to be able to actually watch Star Trek again, I was like, something's got to go, and this is unfortunately it.
So why wouldn't Paramount Plus go if there's no more Star Trek for a while?
Well, that is also an option. Although I still want to catch up because I do have the last season of South Park plus the South Park mini movies they did plus the last season of Beavis and Butthead reboot they did. So I have some stuff to work through on that, at least for the short term. And I think Trek is coming back sooner there because Trek, I suspect, we have no confirmation, but I expect we're going to start seeing this deluge of information over the next couple of weeks now that the strikes are over. I would imagine they'll get a release date out there soon for Discovery's final season, and I would suspect it's probably coming sometime in early 2024, or February, March, something like that. They won't want to let people pull the ripcord on the Lopez calculus on Paramount Plus too quickly.
Yeah, so how does it work? Do you just go in there and say, suspend my account for now, or do you have to cancel your account and re-enroll later?
So for Apple TV Plus, they basically sent me a note saying, we're raising your rates effective December 1st. If you want to quit, you need to give us 24 hours notice. You can quit as of the, 30th.
When did you get that email? I never got that email.
I think it came up as actually a notification in the app and basically said, if you want to quit, you quit. And so I basically looked at it and was like, you want to go by how much? And I was like, well, I know we're not getting those two series because they just had Silo was this summer and Foundation was this fall. So like, that's not happening. And yeah, for me, I was just like, you know what? I can wait. I'll watch a little bit of it this month. I'll watch a couple of the shows that I've been putting off and then I'll cancel it. And when I pick it back up, I'll just jump back into the stuff that I like.
Yeah. Well, they got me by the short and curly because they own all my stuff, right? So
yeah, but the Apple one. You still have all your stuff. Just because you're canceling the TV Plus doesn't mean you don't have your movies.
No, what I'm saying though is with the Apple One.
Oh, because you have the bundle.
I have 2 terabytes of space and stuff.
Right.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I don't have the bundle. So for me that's moot point.
Yeah. So I have 3 active subscriptions right now. One I should get rid of in February. Haven't played that in a while.
But it's a good. I kind of wanted to raise this as part of a larger conversation, which is to say, knowing that 2024 is going to be a little bit lighter and more sporadic. Jaime, I'm very curious to know how you were applying the Lopez calculus because, there's going to be pretty big gaps of nothing new for a while on things like Max, on things like Netflix, on things like, Prime. Obviously, Prime is a different one because you are getting a sort of a twofer on that one as well. Yeah, is it time to pull the plug on a few of these?
For me, what I have been thinking about is like, wow, there's like a whole bunch of these really good picks we've had that I just never got around to actually seeing that maybe now is the time. So all right, product managers from streaming services, here's what you do. You create a category for people like me that is literally like, this is stuff that was popular that you somehow never got around to watch.
Mm.
And maybe even throw in a couple of like, hey, you watched a few episodes and you never finished it, you know, just to give me a queue of things that I can, you know, satisfy my cravings with while there is this lull in new content. Like, I feel like there is stuff there that, you know, granted isn't new, just like I recommended Extrapolations, which is not brand new, but I finally got around to it, and maybe I am able to get around to it because stuff is starting to slow down.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about crazy subscription prices, I'm just looking at my Gibson. I have this Gibson Learn to Play Guitar thing, which I haven't really touched much this year, right? But I got it when it first came out, when the app first came out, so I got an early bird yearly subscription for like $113. I think it's like $99 US, right? And they have a monthly subscription for $28.99. Let's call it $30, right? So I'm paying $113 a year, $114 a year. But if I paid monthly, it would be $360.
Yikes.
Yeah, like that's a jump from like a yearly subscription. If you don't have the early bird, there's two of them here. There's one $149 and $175, but still that's not $360. like most, you would think most subscriptions, it would be kind of close, like the medium popcorn thing, you know, like you move from the medium to the large because it's just like, it's a couple extra bucks, right? You know, that's crazy, eh? That pricing.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, because I keep looking at it and thinking, well, I should cancel because I didn't really play much this year. Like, it's really good because I'm learning how to play with a pick, which I never did learn how to do. And it's got songs that I've always wanted to learn how to play on it. But then, I don't want to pay $360, so I might as well keep the $130. It's kind of like, you know, I'm keeping it because I'm getting such a good deal on it because I joined early, right? Weird. Things we do for money.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, this isn't being billed to the company. I should change all my billing over to my company card now that I'm, you know, basically working for nobody.
You're working for you, man.
I'm working for me. Yeah. So I joined this thing called the Job Search Council.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a book out there. I discovered it from, I belong to a bunch of Slack channels. One of them is like a leadership channel for managers and, you know, staff, engineers and people who are like sort of in leadership roles. Right. And my CTO put me onto it. And there's a job channel where people talk about going, you know, searching for going through interview processes. And it's crazy. Every industry across the board, any tech industry everybody's having a hard time finding jobs. But so I discovered this somebody posted this thing about this book that they had found called Never Search Alone. And it's about, rather than, you know, blindly going in and putting your resume together and blindly going in and putting your LinkedIn page together and then, you know, doing what they call spray and pray, where you spray your resume out to like, you know, thousands of places, and then you maybe get a nibble here and there, thus the spray and pray. And you're applying to like just jobs because, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not like the job you want to do. So the whole idea behind this job search council is you work with other people who are also looking for work. And, you know, so they're like your support group. Kind of thing, like, because they're going through the same challenge you are, and they, you know, you get to run stuff past them, and they say, yeah, that sounds good, that whatever, and then you ultimately put together what the ideal work you want to do, right? And then they sort of like fact check you on, like, hey, you've got this offer, and you're going to take it without negotiating. And they also teach you how to negotiate in this thing, but the idea is to sort of like keep you on target with the work that you want to do, as opposed to just going out and getting a job and then being miserable like everybody does. Right. You know, so it's kind of an interesting way. And I mean, like the current process I'm using to find work is not working, period. So might as well try something. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm doing. Plus I'm also lighting my own, there's also getting back onto the IT Guy Technologies horse, and that seems to be doing okay. So far. Right. So, but you know, just if that's, I mean, the reason I went to work for full time was because I went into app development and then the bottom fell out of that market in 2015, right? So that's how I maybe will remember. What do we call it? The race to the bottom?
The race to the bottom was, I believe, the cause of the indiepocalypse. That we coined it or took somebody else's coining at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I also belong to another one of the our fellow podcasters on another podcast. He's been a guest on our show, but he on More Than Just Code. I mean, he started a group where people who are independent like me, you know, so we have a Slack channel we can go to and we can share ideas and bounce problems off each other. And so they have a Wednesday coffee call where at noon you get together and everybody like noon whatever time, and you get together and you just have a water cooler conversation for like an hour, right? And then on Friday we all post our goals for the week, kind of thing, like what we got done this week and what we're planning to do next week. And there's another little support group as well that's out there. Cool stuff.
It's good that there's a community supporting that.
Yeah, well, it's got to be something, right? Because none of this stuff is working out of the box, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's weird because it seems like there's jobs out there. It's just a question of, you know, fit, pay, place, all that kind of stuff.
Well, and the thing is, I think the problem is, like, there's a couple of recruiters that I follow, and one of them is like, you people are being too picky, like in terms of who you're, like you're not going to get every point on your resume is going to get covered. I mean, on your job posting, you're not going to find that guy who knows exactly the thing, right? Mind you, the company I worked for was very picky about who they would even interview, right? So, I mean, there's tons, like, you know, all the banks have open positions, but none of them are speaking to me. And like, hello, I have like 7 years of banking experience, you know, like, I don't get it.
Yeah, that's weird.
Plus, I have a super secret project that's coming out for Black Friday, which will hopefully put me on the map in some ways, but you know, yeah, I'd love to get an amazing job and then say to all the people who didn't interview me, like, screw you, you know, you had your chance, you blew it.
Yeah. Nothing. There's no better revenge than success, right? Yep.
That's true. It's all say goodbye. Okay. See you guys next time. Bye.
All right. We'll come back eventually. We promise.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.